On today's episode of Insight EPI.
I think it would negatively impact those countries as well as the EPC states.
I always say it's also a very collaborative organisation.
And I think it's a bit of a shame, actually. I'd like to bring them back. So that's a bit of a call to the EPO, if you're listening.
This is Insight EPI, the podcast brought to you by the European Patent Institute. As the professional body representing European patent attorneys, the EPI is engaging with all things pertinent to our field on a continual basis. Whether you're an EPI member or student, an EQE candidate, or just interested in what we're doing, look behind the scenes with Insight EPI. In this very first episode of Insight EPI, things are about to get pretty controversial. We talk about the latest developments in the EU regarding the patenting of plants, especially plants obtained using new genomic techniques, also known as NGT plants, and the EPI's position on these developments. We've brought two very knowledgeable experts on board to explain the topic.
My name is Simon Wright. I'm the current chair of the Biotechnology Committee, otherwise known as the Biotechnology Inventions Committee, to give it its full name. And I'm here with the current secretary, Brigitte Carrion Taravella.
Hello, Simon. I'm happy to be there. Not an easy task, but we will manage it.
The Biotech Committee is the body of the EPI that deals with all questions related to inventions in the field of biotechnology. As such, it holds regular meetings.
And we have other meetings when we need to. We have various subcommittees to deal with certain specific issues. So we have a subcommittee that deals with plants. A little bit more on that later. We have a subcommittee that deals with sequence listings and the new listing ST26 standard that came in a couple of years ago. We have subcommittees that deal with antibodies. And I think, Brigitte, that's a very keen area of interest for you.
Yeah, you're right, Simon. Exactly.
So the main objective of the Biotech Committee is to support the biotech community by monitoring and analysing developments in the field of biotechnology patents with respect to law and regulation. The committee provides guidance and comments about the EPO guidelines for examination. Occasionally, it also prepares position papers to set out the EPI's views on specific issues and developments.
We present position papers on things like antibodies and sequence listings and so on and so forth. We will talk a little bit more about position papers when we get on to the EU developments. But it's quite an active committee. We feed into the guidelines. Of course, the EPO changes the guidelines, presents amended guidelines for approval, and we feed into those, and the committee gets involved in other legal areas which are not always necessarily biotechnology related, but impact the biotech or pharma area in particular. And one of those areas that we've been quite involved in, because it affects our members probably more than other sectors perhaps, is the EPO's amendment of the description and how much description needs to be amended to bring it into line with some with the allowed claims.
I remember that it was in 2020 or 2021, it was the first guidelines having a chapter dedicated to antibodies. And clearly all the activity done by the biotech committee was really important to try to adapt or to make some change available, I will say, into the guidelines. And we have a very high, I will say, activities to make the biotech guidelines, that part about antibodies, to be changed and to clearly be adapted with the current case law that we have. So it was very benefit, I would say.
Yes, indeed. Perhaps the other thing to say about the biotech committee is that we have one member per state. So every country of the EPC can nominate a person to be on our committee, and we regularly have contact with the EPPC thematic groups. And for many, many years, the biotech committee would have meetings with equivalent personnel at the EPO. We'd go over to Munich once a year, and there would probably be anything between 6 and 8 representatives of the biotech committee, and we'd be meeting with DG1, sometimes some legal members, some examiners, some senior examiners, some management. And that was a very, very useful meeting. Unfortunately, of course, that stopped during the pandemic. They haven't, unfortunately, come back. I mean, what's happened more recently is that the biotech issues have been subsumed into larger groups and meetings, either through SOCIEPA, which I think I probably were going to voice some concerns here, perhaps a bit controversially, in that it's actually more difficult to convey and talk to members of the EPO about some of those issues, because they're not always specifically dedicated to biotech. They don't always know about the antibodies or the sequence listing or the specific issues that we want to talk about. And I think it's a bit of a shame, actually. I'd like to bring them back. So that's a bit of a call to the EPO, if you're listening, that would be, I think, a good thing for the biotech committee to sort of resume those meetings that we used to have all those years ago.
Let's talk now about what happened in the European Parliament, more specifically about its controversial proposal on NGT plants, which is the main topic of this episode.
Basically, we learnt about this in, I think it was early February. It came as a bit of a surprise, really, because basically the EU wanted to introduce some legislation about NGTs, NGT standing for new genomic techniques, and that is to produce plants. Now, there's a number of ways you can produce and generate new plants. You can use them, obviously, by traditional crossbreeding techniques, and that's been used for hundreds of years. Or you can use genetically modified techniques, and those, of course, have existed for a couple of decades now, although in particular, there's one technique called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, which I'm sure many of you have heard about. And that technology won the Chemical Nobel Prize in 2022. First time it was an all-women team, actually. And that's a very, very powerful genetic technique, a bit like genetic scissors, to be able to cut DNA in a particular area, snip out a gene or replace a gene, or maybe even amend or correct a gene. So there's lots of different ways you can produce different plants these days. And the original proposal from the European Parliament was to basically differentiate the new plants depending on the type of modifications and the level of modifications. So for example, they were splitting them into an NGT1 and NGT2 plants, two different baskets, whereby NGT1 plants, which don't have much variation from a naturally occurring plant, they would be basically treated like a naturally occurring plant. So they wouldn't be treated by the GMO, which is the genetically modified organism legislation. You know, they could be released or dispersed as if they were naturally occurring. The second basket of organisms or plants, which was the NG2, and that is for plants which have got a higher degree of variation, so they've got more significant modifications and they're more likely to be genetic modifications, and those NG2 plants would be covered by the GMO legislation. In other words, the GMO legislation concerning preparation, sale, release, and so on and so forth would apply to those plants which were, I suppose, quite significantly variant from the naturally occurring ones. So that was the original proposal, and that was going through Parliament.
But suddenly, things changed. There seemed to be a last-minute intervention that took things in a completely different direction, and so the EPI had to react immediately. Instead of sticking to the original one, the new proposal was
to basically ban the patenting of any NGT plants, any new genomic technique plants, not only by traditional crossbreeding methods, but also by any genomic technique. So it was very, very broad. And that was sort of snuck in right at the last moment. And it took a lot of people by surprise. And we only learnt about the proposal in the European Parliament, I suppose, probably about a week or so before it was actually debated. And the EPI was very, very quick to react. We jumped into action. We decided what to do. There was a board meeting, which was almost at the right time. And we discussed what to do, and we decided the EPI would produce its own position paper, but the EPI would also co-sign some of the other position papers from other interested bodies, NGOs and trade organisations. I think this is probably a good example of the way the EPI can actually function very quickly and very effectively and react fast to some equally fast-moving legislation. And I think it took a lot of people by surprise. I mean, at the end of the day, the European Parliament hadn't done a proper assessment. They hadn't consulted the industry. They hadn't consulted lawyers. They hadn't consulted the EPO. Basically, they hadn't consulted very many people at all. And despite EPI and plenty of other opposition, unfortunately, the European Parliament decided to ratify, to pass that legislation. So not only is it dealing with NG1 and 2 baskets of plants, but also passed a law, a resolution to basically ban the patenting of these plants.
But what happens now? As of today, the proposal is not yet legally binding. It still has to go to the European Commission. The outcome could be influenced by upcoming elections. Heavy lobbying.
There is a lot of stuff to manage at the European Commission level currently, because a part of that proposal about patentability of plants, there is also currently a huge proposal of regulation for the pharmaceutical fields. So we have no clear idea about what can be the priority, I will say, of the current Belgium presidency. But as you said, we will have new elections. So I will say starting from now until July or August, nothing will really change, I will say. The fact that we have election at the European Parliament will certainly allow our advocacy people to have a discussion with member states directly, just waiting for the new parliament and the new, I will say, rapporteur that will be designated for renewing, I would say, with the discussion and so on. I have a question for you, Simon, because we have the current proposal of the European Commission, but you have such kind of hierarchy of the law at an international level. If I remember well, we have a trade international agreement specifying that any invention can be patentable. What is the issue with the plants? I heard also about plant varieties. What is the difference?
Let's take the EU parliamentary vote first. It's simply a proposal at the moment. Mm. And these proposals, these amendments, proposed amendments for the law, would have to be agreed by the European Council. And the European Council may adopt the proposal, might make their own amendments, or they can send it back to the European Parliament. So at the moment, the EPC hasn't changed, nor has the EU Biotech Directive changed. And neither of those actually exclude gene-edited plants from patentability at all. I mean, there was a new controversial new Rule 28, and that was concerned plants made by an entirely biological process. But obviously, changing EU legislation now to exclude gene-editing plants from patentability would probably would easily take a couple of years and maybe some protracted negotiation between the member states.
At the end of the day, it would require an amendment to the EPC. The EPO might do that if the EU Biotech Directive was changed. But that may raise some difficult issues because of countries like, for example, the UK and Switzerland, which are in the EPC, but they're not in the EU. So therefore, a very convoluted scenario, but also considering the importance of the topic we're talking about today.
In summary, we have for plants, when the plant is coming from traditional breeding, so what we call essential biologic process, it's not patentable, but you have such kind of protection via plant varieties. And if the plant-related invention is about to genetically modify plants, then it's eligible for patent protection, it's right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. I wanted to go back a little bit about NGTs, Brigitte, because you talked about what actually are they. And of course, there are a number of reasons why you'd want to modify plants. I mean, not only by traditional methods, but also perhaps introducing new genes or correcting genes, changing genes. So, for example, you might want to introduce desired traits, for example, improved yield or disease resistance, tolerance to environmental stresses such as drought. And obviously, there's the acceleration of development of new plant varieties by traditional methods. The new genomic methods allow you to do things that traditional crossbreeding techniques won't allow you to do. There's always the tension with plant variety rights, hence the exclusion to patentability for plant varieties, although you can patent plants at a much, much higher, for example, genomic or genetic level. And that is because you have this parallel plant variety system, although that's very, very different. I mean, maybe you can say a little bit about it, Brigitte, but my understanding is that the plant variety, the protection is much, much narrower.
Yeah.
And the system is, I think you're looking for DUS, isn't it? Distinctivity, is that correct? Uniformity, and is it sustainability?
Plant variety rights are another narrower form of plant protection. They can be obtained for breeds that are unique, distinctive, uniform, and sustainable, to name the most important criteria.
I will say, if we want to simplify things, with respect, by using plant varieties, it's a mean to protect your phenotype. And if you are using patent, you will protect the genotype, so all the gene-related matters and so on. And the criteria to obtain patentable invention based on plant, it's clearly different than the one with respect to plant varieties, I will say.
Well, I think it's very interesting, isn't it? Because you have two parallel systems. You have patents and you have plant variety rights. I mean, they're complementary, but they're very, very different scope because they cover
exactly.
They cover different things. And, you know, you can't get a patent for a plant variety because you have plant variety rights. But you can patent plants at a much higher level than the varieties. You can't patent a variety per se, but you might be able to patent a plant with a particular gene that gives rise to those plant varieties.
And what I would like also to highlight when we are discussing about, I would say, new genomic plants, specifically because I'm working for a pharmaceutical industry or for a European industry, I would say, we are talking about biotechnology, and in that field, the innovation is really, really important. It's why patents are really important, because we have to keep in mind that Europe was a pioneer for biotechnology invention. And if we want to contribute to the sustainability of Europe about food security, climate change, and so on, we have to use biotechnology, I would say, to try to find new genomic plants to improve the current situation that we have in Europe. And it's also important for our competitiveness, comparing Europe and US.
In other words, the EPI warns that the European Parliament's proposal could be detrimental to Europe's competitiveness, sustainability, and innovation, to say the least, a worrying development.
I mean, when we compare it with plant variety rights, we talked about DUS earlier, which is distinctiveness, uniformity, and stability. You have to fulfill those three criteria to get a plant variety right. There's no requirement for novelty or non-obviousness from a patent. And they last, I think PVR lasts 25 years, maybe 30 for some species, whereas, of course, patents will only last up to a maximum of 20 years.
You're right. And the duration for plant varieties, it can be 25 and up to 30 years of protection for specific species.
So the proposed changes by the European Parliament, we don't know what's going to happen with them. And the most likely way that it's going to change the law before the EPO is that they need to change the EPC, and for that to change, the EU Biotech Directive probably needs to be amended. So that would probably be the most likely legal route, if at all it happens. But it's very, very early stages yet. All the lobbyists have come out in force, and at the moment we don't really know what's going to happen. Although obviously the EPI is being very active. I know our members of our biotech committee are all contacting the relevant people in their government and their patent offices to persuade them that they ought to amend this legislation or perhaps halt it.
And we will have our next council, end of April in Sofia, and we will certainly have also a lot of discussion around that position paper with our, I will say, colleagues or all other member state part of the council. I have a question in mind for you. What do you think about what can be the impact of this new proposal on the non-EU member states? And I know that you are in the UK. So have you heard about any comment from UK about that proposal? Or
that's a very interesting question, isn't it? I mean, it would obviously impact the UK because if the EU Parliament goes through and the EU Biotech Directive gets amended, and then the EPO then decides to amend the EPC, then that obviously would affect non-EU countries such as the UK and Switzerland. And I think it would negatively impact those countries as well as the EPC states. I don't think this is a good development at all. I think it's not a good idea to start banning the patenting of genetically modified plants or plants that have been modified by genetic techniques or perhaps what we ought to say, non-traditional crossbreeding techniques. I think it would be disastrous for the industry. I think it will stifle innovation because at the end of the day, these plants take a lot of time, effort and money. They need a lot of research and development. They are not cheap to generate. And if plant breeders aren't able to get protection or patent protection, should I say, because PVRs aren't good enough, they're simply not broad enough. Mm-hmm. If you cannot get patent protection for your newly created plant, then that's going to hinder innovation because companies are simply not going to invest all that money, time, effort and money in research and development to produce a new plant. So I think it would have a very significant chilling effect on that industry.
Evidently, we're talking about an issue that's controversial and dynamic. Through this podcast, but also our website, the EPI will keep you informed about the latest developments. Additionally, on patentepi.org, you'll find the EPI's position paper together with a number of comments. And of course, more on that also in the next issue of EPI Information. Next time on Insight EPI.
When we did these exams, I mean, they were just taken in one go. Everything just got cancelled all of a sudden.
That was the major shift. It was a big shock. It was a huge shock for the candidates.
Make sure to tune in to our next episode of Insight EPI. For further learning materials, updates on events and services, make sure to check out epi-learning.org as well as our website and subscribe to this podcast on your favourite streaming platform. Insight EPI. Information from the profession, for the profession. This episode was produced by WHS Learning.